Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. This is your good friend, Patrick O'Dowd, welcoming you into another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Bandwagon Nerds is, of course, brought to you by the Chair Shot Radio Network here on thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
And I am joined by your usual bandwagon cast of characters. That's right. They're all here today. We got the scientist DP. We got the lawyer Dave Ungar. We've got the live studio audience PC Tunney, Mr. Saturday Night. I tried to watch Saturday Night Live last night and then was like, oh, this is a rerun. Of course I would catch a rerun. Why did I show up for a rerun?
It's June.
I don't care.
We should have known that. There's never been a new episode of Saturday Night Live in June, ever.
Yeah, I don't live, breathe, eat, sleep Saturday Night Live. I just happen to be up at 11:30.
How about the Utah Uvulas? That little ball thingy that hangs in the back of your throat?
See, so we're not on that show now. Oh. And so for those of you, when you listen to...
It's like just, 103, and I was listening to Hockey Talk.
Here it is. It's Monday. It's Monday as we drop this podcast. And because nobody can act like a fucking professional and recognize that we don't... this is like the Sony and Marvel Cinematic Universe just sort of blending into each other but making no goddamn sense. Anyway... We always record Hockey Talk, David Ungar and I. We record Hockey Talk for Tuesday in front of the show. We were running late, and we had an interloper come into the call because it's same radio setup. No.
There's your new handle, Tunney, the interloper.
Whole fucking thing. The interloper being one PC Tunney as we were discussing the National Hockey League final names for Utah. There's six of them out there that can be voted on. Or Dave, who is like Doug from the movie Up. And just distracted by squirrels. And there's this squirrel in the upper right-hand corner of our call flashing inappropriate Utah whiteboard name. That squirrel would be PC Tunney. While Dave is trying to do a podcast. And he just couldn't control himself. finally he kept calling attention to it. And so the comedy of errors that is what happens on the Chairshot Radio Network here on the Chairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head, bled into both that and now this podcast. And I'm thrilled to have it happen.
What for? Sodas rule.
Yeah, they do.
I don't even know. I don't know what that was. I don't know. And you've got your microphone up.
Sodas rule.
Yeah, they do.
Okay. Not sure where that fits, but DP, how are you?
He's just derailing now.
Right. Yeah, everything's wrong. How are you? How's the tower construction?
Six bags in to, 30, 40 bags that are in there, I think. And it still doesn't look like anything yet. So, it's interesting.
So I gotta ask this question. This purchase, which was a significant purchase, comes on the heels of what I thought was some sort of detente with the missus about Lego purchase. So for those of you who don't know, our good friend DP is a Lego enthusiast, and Lego has brought out a Lego set for the Tower of Barad-dûr from Lord of the Rings, which for those of you who don't know the names but have seen the movie, it's the tower with the big fucking eye. And well, Mr. DP, he invested in said Lego structure, coming on the heels of us discussing how we were going to scale back a little bit. I actually felt guilty sharing the Legend of Zelda set with you. And then you turn around and you're like, look what I got. It was very... So how are things going in the household, in the scientist household? Are we doing okay?
Oh, we're doing just great.
Just great?
It's more my side of trying to consolidate, not the missus.
All right.
So she doesn't give a hot shit, really.
She didn't leave, did she, Dan? Still there.
I think I still hear the TV on.
She just got a new car. She's fine.
Oh, well. I got this perfect trade-off for you. I'm going to get the Tower of Barad-dûr. You get a new car.
Let me just straighten this out. I don't think Dan had anything to do with it.
Okay, here's the really important question. How long did that Lego set take to put together the fully functioning Lego car for the Mystery Drive?
That'd be crazy, eh?
It's a work in progress. We're still trying to expand the trunk,
Good mileage.
It's a two-seater right now. It's only a two-seater right now. We're going to put in a back row,
Nice. Very good. You just got to get the pieces.
That's right.
You just got to go to like Walmart and get that like box of bricks. That's just like the assorted brick box.
Yeah, I was going to say, does it have an engine block or an engine brick?
Well, it lights up. It's got a little button that you can light it too, which is nice, So really
nice.
Cool.
Very good. Very good. Oh my. Anyway, congratulations on that set, man, because I don't know that I would have the patience to build something like that.
It'll be a
little O'Dowd on the other hand. Little O'Dowd's all for it.
You gotta crank out just a couple bags at a time. Where you gotta work it in shifts. That way you don't get overloaded, don't get worn out.
Tony's fingers are bleeding from putting bricks in.
No.
Tony has put together the DeLorean
I gave him.
Tony has several thousand bricks to put together himself at his own domicile.
That's fair. I did not have Lego talk on the bingo card, but I'm glad I put it on the bingo card.
Keep giving me a hard time. I'm going to bring that thing over not built.
That's hilarious. All right, let's talk about today's show. We do have we have a solid show coming up. We're not covering the show in its entirety, but the first two episodes of the newest Disney Plus Star Wars series, The Acolyte, dropped this week. And to say that it's a house divided here in the bandwagon, might be a little bit of an understatement. There's some feelings there. We have a loaded trailer park, couple of major trailers hit this week. We're going to talk about where we are going to purposefully enter into the world of professional wrestling a little bit with a major signing by a WWE talent to one of the biggest talent agencies in Hollywood, as well as some news around the nerdosphere, some actor retirements, casting rumors before we roll into what you watch. And very, very exciting day. And we're going to kick it all off, though, by talking about Acolyte, new Star Wars series dropping on Disney Plus. And it's an interesting conundrum when you look at just the overarching reviews that have come out with this. This has been very positively reviewed critically. It's got a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. The unfortunate negative side to the Star Wars fanboy fan base has reared its ugly head once again, as the fan reviews, the audience reviews of this series are in the 20s. And as Dave would like to say, a lot of it is angry white dudes complaining that the series is too woke, which seems to just be a common refrain amongst our fan base. I'm really concerned, and I'll be upfront. I didn't like the first two episodes of Acolyte very much at all. In fact, I, until the last 10 minutes of the second episode, loathed it. Was very, very not happy with it. But not because of the characters and who was in a lead role. It really is much more of a plot-driven, I don't like how they've told some story here. And I find it to be dumb, insulting, and it has taken away from my enjoyment of the series. All of that said, going after the show, this is a very uncomfortable trend that I've really started to see out of some of these dedicated fan bases. And we've talked about it over and over and over again. We talked about it in the MCU with Eternals and Ms. Marvel and the Marvels and Black Panther. Basically, anything Marvel cranks out, there's the Captain Marvel, like all of this shit. Every time something comes out, it seems like there is this crazy backlash against nothing to do with the story or the content within the series, but about who was casted and why that role seems to be kind of quote unquote wrong in some way, shape, or form. And that Disney is like forcing some weird agenda by having the audacity to cast women in roles or men of color in roles, like an Asian dude is in a lead role. Oh my gosh. And the number of people that are just mad to be mad continue to astound me. And I think it's going to happen with Captain America, Brave New World, whether it's bad or not bad. It already happened once with Anthony Mackie, so I can't imagine it won't happen again. But let's start there. Before we get into how we feel about it, what is wrong with these people? Like, because I don't understand how your space monster alien things that is completely just imaginatory, how you can be mad at the audacity of not white dudes running the show.
You said it. It's non-white dudes in starring roles. And that's what's pissed off a lot of... it's a sad state of affairs that every time this happens, it doesn't matter. I mean, anything Disney related, any Disney property, the backlash against Disney is real. And I mean, Pat, we've talked about it privately amongst ourselves, but the backlash against Disney is very real. And I don't even think Disney's overtly trying to say we're inclusionary. I mean, they've said it. But I don't think they're making these decisions just for the sake of, fuck it, we got to be inclusionary. It's just like, well, here's the story we want to tell. Let's go ahead.
Well, we made up a word there. We're inclusive. Inclusionary right. Is just, the English major in me was like, I said it first. It was like, no, that's
well,
not it.
I mean, yeah, I don't know if it's a real world word or not, but the point is, I don't think Disney hasn't come out and said, we have to be, do something just for the sake of doing it. But people are jumping on that bandwagon. I mean, the review bombing of this has got, okay, Tony says it's in the dictionary, so maybe it's real.
Not really in the context that we're using it. But
part of the problem with the review bombing is, and a lot of it's like AI bots. And no, this is not like, me supporting anything that Tony Khan has ever said about AI bots and stuff like that. But there is a lot of AI that's come out here that are just review bombing these things to bump the negative numbers up. That's one thing, but yeah, I don't get it. Just anytime you got a woman in a lead role, anytime you got a minority in a lead role, God forbid you combine the two. Holy shit. That's the worst combination of all time. It's hard. There are valid concerns with this story. And, I think we haven't even gotten into the episodes yet. One of the biggest ones happens 5 minutes in. That's a big concern. But I
don't know if it's a concern just as much as it is, deceptive advertising.
Well, okay, let's get to it. Of course, we can.
Well, no, hold on, because Tony had something. I don't know if he was just going to be the grammar police on me on the use of the word inclusionary.
No, it's perfect for this situation. Designed or intended to provide equal access to opportunities and resources for people who might otherwise be excluded or marginalized, such as those having physical or intellectual disabilities or belonging to minority groups. That sounds exactly.
That's pretty what close.
Okay.
But honestly, I don't have anything to say about idiots that don't like what they're seeing here for no fucking reason whatsoever. So I will not fuel that fire. DP, you go ahead and fuel it.
Yeah, DP has it. DP, you fuel it. Throw some gas on that bitch.
Look what you did, you little jerk.
I'm still looking at the bags that I've put together for my Lego set. Stressing out about that.
Well,
yeah, it's really stupid. It's really stupid if that's what's happening.
Yeah.
But I haven't watched it yet. So
you haven't watched the series yet. Yeah.
Have not. But I have seen some of that stuff online about people getting a little, you know, ridiculous about the casting and all that too. So it just, yeah, it's a stupid ass thing. And I don't think it's ever going to go away, which is unfortunate. It shouldn't matter. You know, let the actors be the actors. They're really good at what they're doing. That should have no basis of why you don't watch the show. Like, that's just stupid.
And yet here we are. All right. So let's get into the first two episodes themselves and kind of take this forward. Because I will say, I really did not like a significant part of these first two episodes. Like I said, I was very vocal. In fact, let me read you what I said to the group. Because I think at the very end, I said, I'm done, basically. And
then you came back.
I'm not back all the way yet, but I at least see where they're going. And I'm going to give it the dreaded fine. It's fine. My biggest problem with these first two episodes is not so much the story itself and like the idea of the story itself. It is the willfully stupid behaviors that these characters are taking in the face of what should be logical storytelling, where there is an alternative to getting where they need to go without making the characters objectively stupid in what they do. And my first example is it Osha? Is that how you pronounce her name? Or Asha?
One of the twins,
so
Osha.
The one that's being accused of everything. So, yeah, first of all, shocker. It's twins, everybody. Which, that's another thing, too. I think that there was a mystery there that it's obviously not the mystery that they were telling. But it could have been something that played out a little bit longer. And instead, it was like episode one. We're like, hey, twins. So obviously not as important as I thought it was going to be to the narrative. But when the Jedi don't know that Asha's twin is still alive, they go and arrest Asha. She gets put on a prison ship. This prison ship is run entirely by droids. There's no human beings no living creatures of any sort on this prison ship. She is on this prison ship with a multitude of other prisoners, including one cybernetic character who has the ability to hack into droids. And I don't care how arrogant Douche Canoe the Dumbest, as I am naming him, not Yorg, Douche Canoe the Dumbest is. You like, who does that? Who does that at all? And even if he didn't arrest all those other characters, there's not one like human guard. Oh shit, there's nothing to prevent this. Like there's arrogance and then there's stupidity. And the whole thing is then brought as a form or function to leading to a ship crashing. Where even if you just have the potential for living guards that get overrun and taken over, I can buy that a little bit more as a realistic prison break that then takes place. Never mind the fact that this vehicle falls from space onto a planet surface, yet somehow Asha lives. And then you have Douche Canoe the Dumbest walk through the ship and be like, nobody could have survived this, yet somehow she survived and is running around a blizzard planet in a jumpsuit with no coat for what it seems to be an extremely long period of time and is none the worse for it. Anyway, those are the things that narratively take me out of a story, no matter how interesting and intriguing the story may be. And there is an interesting and intriguing story here with this Master Jedi who is clearly carrying some gifts that believed that, was it Maya? May. That May was dead in this fire from when they were children. May is out on this range. She's speaking to a mysterious light teacher. Like, there's elements there. But when you just do abject, dumb things. Or Asha. Like, I don't mind that Asha's being forced to chase around this image of her younger self or her sister and is being led astray. But when you're being accused of murdering Jedi and you come upon the dead body of a Jedi, should you pick up the weapon? Should you touch the body? Like, no! Like, just no! Stop it! And it was completely worthless and pointless because within 3 seconds they're like, oh, they couldn't have done it anyway and everything's fine. Fuck that. That's stupid. That makes no sense. You're objectively dumb. And it takes me out of an otherwise intriguing story. Now, I have said that the last 10 minutes were worth it. Also, you advertise this thing with Carrie Ann Moss. Like, hey, look, everybody, we got Carrie Ann Moss. 5 minutes later, she's dead. Thanks for playing. Game over. It's a tried and true strategy that's happened since Psycho. But this may be a new record in killing a big name star for shock value. And I know that initially turned a lot of people off. And I'm not alone on that. That didn't make me as mad. That didn't make me as angry as it made other people. But it's plot devices, and it's the way you tell a story. You have to make it make sense. Even in a world of laser swords and floaty people, it still has to make sense. And it didn't. All right, Tunny, Dave, talk about how much you enjoyed the first two episodes.
You want me to go, Tunny? The Carrie Ann Moss situation, if she does not show up anywhere else in the series, and I got to figure she is, because if she doesn't, it is one of the most egregious bait and switches in Disney Star Wars history, right? I think that's a safe bet. And it's that is not going to do a damn thing to help further your relations with a fan base who's getting disillusioned with a lot of your decisions over the years. And to have Trinity, you know, a recognizable face to come in here as Master Indara, to come in and have her killed off in the first, because I think I said that in a different chat I sent to DJ and Tunny because they'd seen it. I wasn't sure if you'd seen it yet, Pat, or not. So I said, what the fuck is this Deadpool 2 I'm watching? What is going on here?
So it's soon to be Deadpool 3.
Yeah.
She ain't making it out of that 10 minutes.
No, probably not. So that part bothered me. Yeah. I mean, I can get what you're saying, Pat. The storytelling is not as tight as it should be. There is some dumb decisions being made that I don't know, because after two episodes, I don't know whether I'm going to attribute that to. Are they being arrogant? Are they overconfident? Are they just, this is a time of like, if you look at it through the prism of what we know about Star Wars, then it's easy to sit there and second guess and say, this is the dumbest fucking decision of all time. Don't they know how this works? But if you're looking at it through the prism of the High Republic era, and where the Jedi were at that point and what they think and what they feel and what they know, this is all foreign to them. They don't know that there's some Sith entity out there who's about to make a power play right now. And so
putting somebody on a prison ship with other prisoners with no, like, it doesn't even have to be Douche Canoe the dumbest. Everywhere you've seen in the Republic, there's been living creatures on ships too. This one doesn't.
No, that's true. That they totally automated this for the first time in Star Wars history.
Yeah, that's the stuff that doesn't make sense to me. That's not arrogance. That's laziness.
No,
because that's not because the character himself, like Douche Canoe the dumbest. Which by the way, favorite part of the show is Douche Canoe the dumbest. Like I'm ripping on Yord, but he's a total Douche Canoe, and he is the dumbest. And I love his pompousness.
I like the gratuitous show of him when he's all cut and everything like that. What's the point of it? Yeah. What's the point of him being shirtless here?
You know, because they tried to show that arrogance by having him apologize for being so flippant with how he imprisoned her. But it just doesn't make sense in the context. Because I'm willing to bet that cyborg guy got arrested for doing AI controlling toy shit. Put him on a ship of droids. Like, what? Put a restraining bolt on him. Do something. These things exist.
They don't have restraint. This is 100 years before restraining bolts, Pat.
Oh, stop that. You still have lasers.
Go ahead, Tony.
Dyke.
Oh, yes. We got a retainer boy out of this, Tony. I don't know. Right, Tony, okay. should we pull back the curtain as to what we were planning to do earlier?
I like what's Sol's Padawan's name? The girl, I forget her name, but she walks by Yord as they're about to leave on the mission, and she's like, Yord, put your shirt on.
Yeah.
That was fun.
His name is Douche Canoe the dumbest.
So she told Yord to put a shirt on, but I'll give you the fact there are a few things that you can sit and think, boy, they could have done that a little smoother. But I thoroughly enjoyed everything. I liked the characters. I liked the plot. I like where they're going with it. I wasn't really bothered by the fact that the first Jedi died right away, because that's kind of the point of what they're doing. I absolutely love the fact that we broke George Lucas's rule of having a Wookiee Jedi. Dude just fucking mind pulls that gun over, breaks it in half, and yells at the dude. Like, I'm like, oh, that is fucking slick. So I'm looking
forward.
Lanaka, I think it is the Wookiee's name, if I'm not mistaken. But that, you know, and the fact that Sol is one of the guys that's trying to be, you know, taken out as well. And who's the fourth one?
They took
The floaty guy. Yeah, they beat the floaty guy. It was the floaty guy, the Wookiee, the third one.
Right,
Moss, floaty guy,
the Wookiee, and Sol. Yeah.
But
now here's the thing too. Like, May has to kill one of these without a weapon.
She
right?
has to kill all of them without a weapon. She killed floaty guy with poison.
No, I know. But there's rules
but
that her master has.
He committed suicide. She gave him the option to do it. She didn't kill him.
He didn't commit suicide. He thought he was brokering peace by drinking it. She tricked him into it. She poisoned him.
I don't buy that. He knew he was taking poison. He took it willingly. He was riddled by such guilt over whatever happened with May that he took that poison willingly. I'm pretty sure about that. Pat, tiebreaker?
Oh, I absolutely think it was him racked with guilt, she giving him an out, and him making peace with that by killing himself.
And that's where the story is. What happened that would get you so guilty that you would actually go and do that? Tony, before you go on, I do want to ask Pat one thing.
I'm good.
The bartender, does that look like Ezra Miller to you? I mean, I'm like, fuck is this guy? Did they put Ezra Miller in here? Is that where he went from the Flash to this shit?
Yeah, something like that. It was an interesting little deal. I actually liked that kill, but I thought that was
the poison.
No. The Carrion Moss kill, where she throws the knife at the bartender because she knows that they'll protect the innocents, and so she uses that before turning around and getting her with the plate.
Yeah,
I like that. I liked how that went down, and I thought that was a clever. It's funny that people are really bothered by that, like, death, and like that was like the small. Like, I had no problem with that. It really is a lot of these sort of logical fallacies that just don't make sense in a greater context of what. What should happen?
I can't imagine that they would shell out the money to get a name like that and just 5 minutes, and there's got to be something bigger with, or even if she's in like a flashback or something to show what happened.
But here's the thing, and this is something that I think is really interesting. So she dies here. What's to stop, and what do we know about her contract that doesn't bring her into other Star Wars projects outside of it?
Oh, sure. I mean, if they can go further back than High Republic.
And there will be, and I absolutely think there will be flashbacks, because this is all about the sins of the past. Clearly, this is about whether you want to call it abuse or things going wrong. Like, it's clear, like, the history there is the story, you know? So that, to me, is what I'd be looking for.
Right. And I think this story is a lot about what the Jedi did that allowed the Sith to not only come to power, but why they wanted to come to power. Why they look at the Jedi so disdainfully and say, you guys are all fucking wrong. This is why we've got to do it this way.
Right. So I think we'll see where it is.
Dan, are you in now? Having heard this, are you in?
Oh, hell, I don't know.
How many bags in are you?
This gave me reasons why to watch it and why not to watch it.
and like I said, the last 10 minutes, when it really felt like we were getting a little bit further there, in terms of the sort of the overall story and lore and the history, it got much more interesting to me. So I'm not done with it just yet, but I definitely need it to tighten up the way that it tells its story and gets us where it needs to go, because those are the sorts of things that take me out of it. So it's being reviewed well by critics. It garnered the largest streaming audience in the history of Disney Plus, or something like that, for its first week on release day. So it did fine in its initial run. We'll see what it actually keeps when its next episode, you know, hits on Tuesday. I'm sure it'll be fine. What we are going to do now, though, is we are going to take our first commercial break. We come back, we're going to take a little visit to the trailer park, do a little bit of news out of the nerdosphere and the wrestling sphere. So stick around for that. You are listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the ChairShot Radio Network or thechairshot.com.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Create the deck of your dreams now at Menards. Spend less time maintaining your deck and more time enjoying it with UltraDeck low-maintenance composite decking from Menards. It's easy to install and built to last. Plus, get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store and on Menards.com. Save big on UltraDeck. And check out more great deals happening now at Menards. Save big money at
Menards. Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Welcome back, everyone, to Bandwagon Nerds here on the ChairShot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. Make sure you head over to prowrestlingtees.com/ChairShot and invest in a ChairShot shirt. Father's Day's coming, and I'm sure you have, some of you have fathers, many of you out there. And, you know, what better way to say, I love you, Father, than to perhaps put in a random Father's Day code, probably something like Father's Day, and get that sweet, sweet ChairShot merch. And then as a thank you, remember that DP is going to show up and force you to help him build his Tower of Barad-dûr with his Legos while in his Daisy Duke cutoffs and tank top.
Can I just wear the robe? Just wear a robe?
You need to show up as Saruman, not Gandalf the White. Let's go with that.
Excellent.
All right. I want to start by apologizing, gentlemen, because apparently I sent you a link to a different story. And my bad, but you know, a story that we're going to get to later. But first, we got to go to the trailer park. And you know what it means when we go to the trailer park. It means we got to get some beautiful banjo. Today, I'm going to be totally arbitrary, and PC Tunney is going to have to pay attention to his soundboard and play some of that beautiful banjo for us to get us into the trailer park. Oh, man, I love it. I love it. Oh. All right. Welcome, everyone, into the trailer park. We got four trailers that we're going to cover this week. I'm going to share that the first one, full disclosure, purely because I wanted to share it, because I'm excited about this. DP hasn't been on the show since I started talking about The Legend of Vox Machina, but I know Dave and Tony have not watched this. So, kids, if you enjoyed the Dungeons & Dragons live-action movie that came out with Chris Pine, this is an animated Dungeons & Dragons series on crack in terms of just its wild inappropriate. Imagine something wildly more sexual, funny, and violent in animated form, and that's The Legend of Vox Machina. I love this series. It's based on the Critical Role podcast, the creators of the people from the Critical Role podcast. This is their baby, their stories, and their gaming sessions. And I don't know how else to express how good this series is, but this trailer is leading into their third series. This has been a long time coming. It's been well over a year and a half or so since this has come. This trailer isn't even actually a trailer. It's like the opening credits to season three, or the opening animation, the hour and a half animation for season three. And it reminded me I need to rewatch this and catch up on the storylines, because there are a lot of fun, deep stories within this sort of crazy animated anime-esque Dungeons & Dragons movie or animated series. So check it out if you want to. If you don't want to, that's up to you. I think it's great. I love the animation. I love the stories. I love the characters. And they're, like I said, they're over the top. They're funny. But yet there is some good heart and some serious stuff involved as well. So I know Tunney and Dave have not watched this. I know DP has not watched this. Tunney's not even going to comment on it because he, you know, it takes everything you can to get him to watch anything animated in the first place. The fact that we got him to watch X-Men 97, accomplishment.
See.
He hates Lord of the Rings. He liked, didn't you like the Dungeons & Dragons movie, though? Didn't we make you watch it? That was your cue to respond.
Making me question me continuing my streak today, feller.
Oh, do you, well, I mean, it's not my fault you hate everything.
I think the Looney Tunes are great.
And hey, if you want to drop or consecutive bandwagon Nerd Street over an animated series on Amazon Prime that I think you should watch, I mean, you do you, you petulant little bitch. Dave, you, I know you haven't watched this. I know you probably have no intention of watching this, which is fine. No,
that's wrong. I have not watched it, but I have every intention on watching it. It is absolutely on my short list of things to watch.
Best intentions.
Best intentions. You were saying something about best intentions?
He wants you to make it inclusionary to your viewing habits.
Yeah, eventually, one of these days, when I have some more time, you know, maybe retirement is somewhere lurking 10, 12 years now. So.
That's something.
It's based on D&D. I've heard nothing but great things about the series, so it's definitely something I want to watch. I just haven't gotten a chance to it. I did not even realize we were up for a third season, but yeah, let's... This one, and what's the other one? Arcane's another one that's kind of similar, isn't it?
Arcane's on Netflix, I do believe. But yeah, it's very similar. I think it's based on, I can't remember, it's based on a video game, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, same sort of idea. DP, I don't know. I know you like Lord of the Rings. I don't know if this is in your wheelhouse. This is very much something that I love. And once I start jumping on Amazon Prime to watch The Boys and probably Gen V, it'll be there for me to watch and catch up on as well. Yeah.
I love the movie. It certainly looks interesting. And for one character name alone, I think we should watch it. And that's Percival Frederickstein von Musel Wasowski de Rolo III.
Yes.
That's one whole name. That's fantastic.
Ray doesn't even have that many variants. Jesus.
That's absurd.
It is absurd. And that's the thing about this is there's a lot of absurdity in it. Like there's a lot of absurdity, but there's also serious plot points and serious story as well. And there's this wide cast of characters. The halfling, I do believe, is the character that you're in. He's a bard. And one of the things that I love is that he has this enchanted lute, I think it is. But when he turns it on, he plays it like this mystical hand like appears and he goes like riding into battle on this hand singing crazy like song. It's bonkers and silly, yet it's great at the same time. I strongly recommend it. I really, really do enjoy it very, very much. So okay, let's move on to a trailer that was so popular it was shared by not one but two members of the bandwagon back to back. I love it when that happens. We do this all the time in the bandwagon, by the way. We are very, very good about out scooping ourselves. Like one of us posts an article, none of us see it, and we do it. And then I petulantly will be like, scroll up. I've had people back it to me and be like, scroll up. And so it all falls into
play. Can I just say, sometimes though, you go like, I was just in there, and then you go through the thread and you see something and you just copy and quick link it. And then you go in there and that's what happened to me. And I was like, I'm sorry, Ray.
Right. And it happens to the best. So this was such an interesting trailer because so the name of the movie is The Killer's Game, stars Dave Bautista and what's her name from Guardians of the Galaxy? Palm, I can't remember what her full name is, but she plays Mantis. I think that's her, right? Like I'm not making that up. Looks like her.
Yes, you're correct.
Yep. Okay. And Dave Bautista plays this contract killer who. He's getting on in years, and Ben Kingsley's in it too, by the way, which is just awesome. I love that Ben Kingsley, by the way, is just kind of willing to do whatever sort of movie is out there. Like he'll do some ridiculous shit, and I appreciate him for it. But so Dave Bautista plays this contract killer who he's really, really good at his job, falls in love, has like a health issue. That leads into a doctor. Doctor says he has terminal cancer. He's going to die within 3 months. And rather than die horribly in front of his fiance having to watch him die, he puts a contract out on himself and basically kind of turns it into this big game to see who can get him first. When the doctor then calls and says, we made a mistake. We read the wrong person's chart. You're not dying.
You get Archer's doctor?
He's like, but you should, you should get your eyes checked. And so it then turns from Dave Bautista's character wanting to die to trying to cancel his contract. And this woman played by Palm, I can't pronounce her last name, saying, fuck you. I want you dead anyway. You killed my father. I'm going to pay everybody to try and kill you. And that seems to be the crux of this film. Meanwhile, his fiance starts none the wiser. Sure, that's going to get out at some point in the movie. I don't know that this movie treads any new ground, but it looks like a lot of fun. Looks like a good way to spend an hour and a half to 2 hours. I'm sure some shit's going to blow up. It definitely is delightfully gory. Like, people just get blown away left and right. Red Band trailers abound, by the way. Tony, you're nodding. You shared this. So why don't you give your thoughts on this since you shat all over The Legend of Vox Machina.
At some point, somebody turns to Bautista and goes, they're all coming to kill you. And he looks up and he goes, I'll tell you who I'm going to fucking kill, that doctor. I just lost my fucking shit. And I'm watching this trailer going, okay, cool. Looks cool. Story's kind of bullshit, you know, whatever. And then, oh, he's not dying. And now he's got to figure out what the fuck to do. That's great. Did you guys also know that potential future world heavyweight champion Drew McIntyre is in this movie?
I did not.
Know that.
Hopefully he keeps the fucking sword at home, Dave. He
needs to bring the sword. You got to bring a sword to a knife fight or a gunfight.
Terry Crews, Ice Cube as well.
All of those are cool. Yeah, I love all that shit.
I'll be watching for sure.
I don't know. I mean, it does look fun, but like you're saying, it doesn't tread any new ground. And as soon as the contracts are involved and he puts a contract on himself, then he wants to cancel it. And everyone's like, no, the contracts are insane. It's like, I know this is made by the same guys who made John Wick, but isn't this John Wick all over again? So I'm like, and his fiance, she's the chick from Rebel Moon, right? I think that's who, your favorite movie, Pat. That's his fiance.
Oh, the love interest?
Yeah, that's
Sophia Boutella.
Yeah. Who I like her. I mean, Rebel Moon notwithstanding, I like her. But I don't know. I mean, it does look fun. It's probably something I'm not going to rush right out to try and check out. But yeah, as long as it's not a John Wick, you know, just rinse and repeat sort of thing.
I think they killed his cat.
They killed his cat. Oh, now I'm in.
Yeah.
Huh?
Fuck.
Yeah. It was Drew McIntyre's cat? I know he likes it.
Drew killed his cat.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
You know, it's funny that that Jason Statham was originally supposed to play the role in Batista, and then he backed out and Batista got it. Jason Statham?
Oh, you said Jason Statham.
Is that like
Roman Reigns?
Is that like Paul Smackage, Tony?
Jason
Paul
Statham.
Yeah, that's what he did. I was like, whoa, that's pretty cool.
Because this is exactly what it looks like, you know, just one of his type of movies, you know, or it's just to shoot him up, you know, a lot of fun action. Looks like got some good comedy, good action, nothing big storyline wise, but just a fun, you know, couple hours to kill kind of movie. So it could be a lot of fun. I'll probably end up watching it. Not that I'm like super excited to go see, but I'll definitely watch it because it looks like it's going to be just a lot of fun shoot 'em up action.
You might be done with that.
Yeah, I'll definitely.
We'll see. Wait, when is it coming out? December? No.
I'll definitely probably check this out on a streaming service. I don't even know that I need to get to a theater to check it out, but it'll definitely, whatever streaming service it pops up on, I will be there to see it. All right. So let's get to this next one. Sony just won't quit with its Spider-Verse films. And we talk about bait and switches, right, guys? We just talked about a bait and switch with Star Wars and Carrie Ann Moss. We got our first look at the third Venom film, Venom the Last Stand. And Venom takes control of a horse. That looked exciting.
Yeah.
But here's something that if you want to kind of put the Sony Spider-Verse in a nutshell problem, it's you ended the second Venom film with Eddie Brock, when he's being whipped around through different worlds where like nothing ever happens or comes of it, he leaves behind a little piece of the alien symbiote in a bar in Mexico where, God, I'm going to forget his name, but he was in Ted Lasso. But the bartender is sitting there looking at it. You think that new symbiote is going to do something. And maybe it does in this film, but it doesn't pay off anything from the post-credit scene that we got. All we see is, I can't pronounce his name, Chidiwale Obudabu before, also Baron Mordo in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, covering it with a jar and taking it away and leading to absolutely no payoff at all. Like, Sony's just being like, fuck you, MCU fans, you're done. And we go from there. So, this trailer, like, the government is after, it seems like the government or a shadow government organization is after Eddie Brock and Venom. You do hear Venom distinctly say that his homeworld has found Venom and that that's what these creatures are that are now, you know, running rampant all over the world. There are strong implications that either Eddie and or Venom, if not both, may die. The name of the film is Venom, The Last Dance, and we get a Venom horse. So with all that, the noise of the Sony Spider-Verse, villain-verse, whatever the fuck verse you want to call it, is there. This is number three. DP, you going to go see it with Tony in that 4X team surround your face theater where the chairs shake?
He's saying no, but I guess I'll be going to see it myself then. Not if it's going to be good or bad, I don't know, but just because it's a Marvel movie and it's ones that I love and I'm going to go see it, even though I didn't really like the second one that much anyway. So I'll end up watching this one. Is Mordo, is he Mordo still? Or is this something, is he playing a different character? Like, I don't know what that, what's happening there.
Nobody knows.
Because if he's not, then I guess Mordo's done in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Because
in the Sony Cinematic Universe. That's the thing. This is Sony shit. This is the same world as Madam Web.
Putting them together.
God help us. By the way.
Oh, you killed them all. What have you done?
That's available on Netflix, by the way, if you want to check it out.
Yep, I'm good.
Netflix, I'm good. Certainly seems
heard enough. To you. I was kind of waiting for the 97 Bulls to show up on this, for The Last Dance, but they never showed up either. So, I don't know. It was
how about a Bill Cartwright Venom?
he doesn't need to have longer arms.
Luke Longley.
Dennis Rodman.
It's Tony.
That's
it's
pretty
Tony
good.
Coach. That's pretty
good. Coach.
Okay. All right. Four solid options, I think.
They put them together. If they,
any
if
of those options will be better be than done. This movie probably will be.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Like, as long as Sony can be done making these, we can. I'm good. Let's this be the end of it, because they looked like they were trying to tie it together with the cutscene at the end of the other movie and bringing Tom Hardy and Venom in, and then
Sony brought out Morbius and Madam Web, and Marvel's like, you know what? That's okay. We're good.
We're fine. Dave,
I mean, the Venom movies are the only thing that arguably Sony has gotten, and I'm air quoting right, because it's not that it's right, but it's just not as bad.
Less bad.
I mean, when you're talking Morbius and Madam Web, the bar is so low, you need an electron microscope to see it. There's a reference to the scientist. I like the first Venom movie. Like, I agree with DP that Let There Be Carnage was less than fantastic. You did get another, like you're saying, this bait and switch at the end of the post credits, which I do think had a lot to do with Disney and Marvel looking at the train wreck that was Morbius and Madam Web and saying, no, man, stay the fuck away from us. But I don't mind the Venom movies. I have not hated them like as vehemently as the others. And Tom Hardy's always been good. They've been entertaining. It's just the storytelling in the Venom movies is so loose. There's nothing tight about it. It's just like all over the place. And, you know, what happened in the first movie had very little to do with what happened in the second. And I doubt what happened in the second will have a lot to do with what's going on in the third. But if it's just silly fun fighting on top of an airplane with some symbiotic alien beast from hell, all right, that sounds cool. Tony, you're going to see this in Screen X, right?
No. The action looks fun as usual, but I think you've seen the funnest thing in the preview is the horse Venom, which is fucking hilarious. So like, that was pretty cool. But I think the best thing about this has been the interaction between Venom and Eddie Brock and how Tom Hardy plays that character alongside being, you know, possessed by Venom. So, I mean, I don't know. This one looks better than obviously two. I didn't watch the second one. I did catch the first one, but I'm not. I don't know. Maybe after I get back from the bar after golfing one weekend and next year.
After a 3-day bender, you're going to check it out.
I don't do 3-day benders anymore. It's just not worth it. No, it's like 6-7 hours. That's about it.
Well, all right. So it sounds like none of us are in a hurry to catch this film. We're talking about benders and shit. So let's get to the last trailer. We got an extended look at the film Alien Romulus. I'm a big fan of the Alien franchise, and I got to say this trailer at least harkens all the way back to Ridley Scott's original film. And one thing that made the original Alien film with Sigourney Weaver so good was not so much the terrorizing creature as it was the suspense that was built around just sort of the ambiance of a ship, the mood that was created about things hiding around every corner, the tension that was built, knowing that everywhere that these characters would go, they could be walking into their last moment. And that is very much what we see in this trailer, as we see, you know, a couple of Space Explorer folks heading off to, we don't know where. They don't really say where they're going. Just an, are you sure you want to do this? It looks like some sort of facility, like a research facility or a lab, where we get face huggers everywhere. It seems like that was the big part of this. We get some very tension-inducing moments and some very cool effects leading to the kind of what I would argue is just sort of the classic Alien tale of predator hunting prey and can folks survive it. I'm very excited for this movie. I've loved the Alien franchise for years. Even the duds I've enjoyed watching, so the not-so-good ones, as well as the good ones. So I'm in for this. Alien and Aliens are among my two favorite just all-time sci-fi horror films out there. And I'm 100% in. I don't know how you guys feel about Alien as a franchise. I'll turn it over to Ungar this time, the lawyer, to give his thoughts on this trailer for Alien Romulus.
Now, you had it right. This does have a feel of more in line with the first movie than even like the second or anything that came out. I don't know where in the timeline does this happen. Does anybody know? Is this like a prequel, a sequel, somewhere in the middle of all this, running parallel?
Honestly, I haven't checked.
Set between Alien 1979 and Aliens in 86.
Ooh,
so between the first,
all
first
right. Year.
So is this the colony? Is this following the colony then?
I don't. But I mean,
that Aliens story, goes to.
The story concerns a group of young space colonists who, while scavenging a derelict space station, come face to face with the most terrifying life form in space.
Yeah.
So
this is after Ripley's asleep before she's floating in space and all this shit's going on. And like you're saying, there's face huggers everywhere who are every bit probably more terrifying than the xenomorphs. The xenomorphs, you know what's going to happen. With the face huggers, you know what that represents, the worst death imaginable. And they really play this up on the trailer where you hear the banging. And you think, is that somebody banging on a door somewhere? No, it's the fucking alien trying to get out of through your rib cage. That's what you're hearing. That's horrifying. And yeah, this has that feel to it, and if you're telling me that that's the time frame we're looking at, I'm doubly interested in this. So, yeah, count me in on this.
So, what this tells me is that this movie, one, is going to end terribly for the humans, and will probably end with the distress signal that leads the Weyland Foundation to then pull Ridley and send her with the Space Marines from Aliens.
And that'll be cool because
that makes sense.
DP, you've played the Halo series, right?
I have, yeah.
So, like, you've played Halo Reach. Like, Halo Reach is this game that you play through knowing that the story is not going to end good. Even though the game's great, you know the story is going to end bad and because you know what happens next. It's kind of like also like Revenge of the Sith. All right, I know what's going to happen here. But so that's going to be cool to watch that all play out. This colony vainly trying to fight for their survival and being just turned into cocoons for these things. So yeah, now I'm extra in.
Yeah, horror movies for me never did it. I was never a big fan of the Alien franchise. The headcrab things, that just makes, you know, I just think of Half-Life and how terrifying that game was to play, and nope, I'm good.
I wonder if somebody's gonna be named Gordon Ramsay in this thing. So
I don't know. Here's the thing. I will always advocate for Aliens for those that are not horror fans, because Aliens is a straight up sci-fi action film, really, like just with Space Marine, which is awesome. And the like the special effects that they have and the guns that they make for that thing. Like they got these like awesome like giant like harness cannons that they're fucking. Oh, it's so great. Totally, Aliens is kind of a different animal. Like there's horror elements, but it's definitely much more of a sci-fi action flick than it is a horror movie. Alien is straight up horror. Aliens, sci-fi action flick, and the less said about Alien 3, the better. And Alien 4. Alien 3, because it didn't get made the way the director wanted it to get made. Alien 4 is dumb. All right.
About anyway. 5, 6, 7, and 8. How many are there? Seven?
Well, those are kind of the main. Well, Aliens versus Predator is just a fun fucking waste of 3 hours to watch those two back to back. Then there's Prometheus, which I think gets a bad rap. I enjoy Prometheus very much. I did not like the follow-up to so much, but Romulus looks interesting, and I'm here to check it out. All right, let's do one little piece of news. This is an intersection of our lives, gentlemen, with the nerdosphere crossing over with the wrestling sphere. As it was announced this week, I'm using an article that I pulled from the Hollywood Reporter after I realized I sent you the same article twice. But the Hollywood Reporter reported this week that the WWE's Tiffany Stratton has signed with Paradigm for representation. Stratton is 25 years old, and she has said that she wants to, before she's 30, cross into the acting sphere. She has made that. She's made no secret, no bones about that. She has a very, solid/strong social media following. Her stock was on the rise in the WWE. I admittedly know that she's been sort of backburnered a little bit for a while as they're telling other stories right now. But from what I've seen of Tiffany Stratton in the brief time that I've followed her in the WWE, I didn't watch her in NXT because I don't really watch NXT. Very, very charismatic performer. Very, very, solid performer in the ring. Like, she's not going to blow your mind away, but she's a very, very good athlete. She was an Olympian in tumbling, or a U.S. national team member. I just seeing this, big deal, and I think she could be a star, but I don't know how big of a star. She's pretty and blonde, so she's got that going for her. But yeah, thoughts on this little news bit, both from a wrestling perspective and from a Hollywood perspective. Does she go the way of The Rock or John Cena, or is she going to be quickly forgotten and relegated to streaming movies on Netflix that everybody forgets about? Anybody can go. Not gonna monopolize it.
Is there a Marines 8 ready?
There's a what?
Is there a Marines 8 ready to go or something?
She's got all the tools to be a big star. I think she's got the look, she's got the charisma, she's got the following. Her stock has just steadily been rising in WWE. I mean, like you're saying, there's some stuff where she's kind of on the back right now because they're doing a few things, but she's going to be the world champion at some point in time. I think she's got all the tools. I used to overlook her greatly until Becky Lynch went to NXT, and then you had that series of matches between Tiffany and Becky, and that really put her on the map. But she's got a lot of those intangibles, and she does have that look that is going to translate very favorably to Hollywood. You put her in some decent roles where it's not just blonde bimbo sort of thing, and you expand on her acting. I think she's got a really good future. Paradigm obviously sees something in her because they're investing big time in her. So they're looking at this,
and they're like the second biggest talent agency in Hollywood or something like that.
I've looked at her I compare her a lot to Charlotte. Same kind of look, same kind of size, similar, build. Tiffy's got a little bit more personality. I won't say charisma, but personality than Charlotte does. And so I think that can translate really well to whatever she wants to do. So I think it's a good move for her, for them. You really need, WWE hasn't really had that breakout star on the women's side of things yet, and I think she could be the first.
Yeah. I remember when, Mercedes Moné, previously Sasha Banks, when she started making her appearances in The Mandalorian, we thought she could be the one. And that really hasn't happened the way that we kind of saw it happening. DP, what do you think? Can Tiffany Stratton move beyond, the wrestling sphere and into Hollywood and be successful at it.
I don't see why not. I mean, for all the reasons you guys just said, I mean, she has everything to make it happen. And she and why wouldn't you? And you have, and when you have the backing that you have with this, with the whole WWE, TKO, the whole media group as well, that can push you and help you become a star, you know, sell that stuff on television as well. You have all the media outlets in the world to try and make you a star. And at that point, it's, you know, it's up to you to fail, because you have everything behind you to make you a star if you want to be. And if she's ready, it sounds like she wants to go for it, and she, that's what she really wants to do. I don't see why she wouldn't. I mean, I don't know if she obviously going to get to the heights of, you know, like The Rock has been doing, or, you know, even Batista's been getting in his roles, and Cena a bit. I could see her maybe a little below that level, but, you know, but I don't see why she couldn't be a prominent figure in some, yeah, if they put her in the right roles, right? Yeah, don't make her just the idiot blonde. Give her a chance, and I bet you she'll do really well.
She is seeking, though, those Marvel DC roles. Like, she said she could be like a buff Barbie doll. So, unfortunately, for what you've just said, she's kind of looking for those stereotypical roles that would transition immediately from wrestling into cinema or streaming series or whatever. But I think she has the charisma 100%. She's definitely got the look, and you know that she has the ability to commit to make herself good at something, right? You don't just make a United States national team without discipline and dedication. You don't just make the impact you have in WWE without discipline and dedication. So I'm sure she can carry that discipline, dedication, and charisma into the acting world. And honestly, guys, I really believe in her. I would say her five-year plan is so effective that in 5 years, she's probably not doing much with WWE anymore.
So you brought it up. You are the casting director for the next Marvel and or DC project. Where are you casting Tiffany Stratton?
Away from The Rock and John Cena or anybody from wrestling.
That's what I'm saying. We're casting Tiffany Stratton in a Marvel DC role. Power Girl.
Yes. Because I was going to say, if Miley Aycock hadn't been cast as Supergirl already, Tiffany Stratton would be perfect for Supergirl.
Power Girl with that costume. She's got to do the comic accurate costume.
Here's a thought.
Here's Billy Alcock.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
I also called Gordon Freeman Gordon.
Billy Alcock.
That was my mistake. She could. I mean, if you get rid of the blonde hair, Wonder Woman. If Gunn is going to look for one, I mean, she has the body. Everybody who complains about, you know, Gal Gadot being too thin, that is not the case with Tiffany Stratton. So you dye that hair black, put her in that outfit, she could be Wonder Woman.
I need more time to think about it.
Yeah.
I got nowhere to go.
There's one character that's going to, if they're going to keep the character around, is going to need a new actress. Talking about that in a little bit.
Yeah, Power Girl.
I'm just saying, Power Girl. She has all of the assets to fill the role of Power Girl.
I'm going to say, Tony, what else does she have?
Tony's got a mouthful of beverage. Yeah. All right. Let's, before this goes in the direction that there it is. Okay. Before we get this too far in a direction I regret, let's get into our next commercial break. When we come back, we'll cover some other news around the nerdosphere, including the continued triumph of one giant lizard. You are listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Welcome back to Bandwagon Nerds here on the ChairShot Radio Network, part of TheChairShot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. Patrick O'Dowd, PC Tunney, DPP, and David Ungar, giving you all of the dirt on news around the nerdosphere, all the good stuff. We're the best of the best. What did I do wrong there, Tunney? Did I confuse you? I was saying nice things about you for a change.
What did I do? I looked over here.
I don't know. You looked disappointed. I was like doing
no,
my shit.
No, I was just sitting here and I looked over here.
He's just thinking about his life and looking distant.
I literally
put it on the whiteboard.
Nearly the only time in the entire show I was not making a facial expression at you guys.
And it's funny because you make so
here.
Many.
All right. I'll put it on the whiteboard.
Yes. Make better facial expressions. All right. I hinted this before we went into the break. We have got That's good. We have got some more. Godzilla just keeps going, guys. And whether it be Godzilla Minus One or the Godzilla Kong franchise, I got two different news bites. The first one is that Godzilla Minus One, which surprisingly dropped on Netflix June 1st, Godzilla fans everywhere went crazy. And I know, like, not everybody on this panel is a big Godzilla fan, and that's fine. I still think it's pound for pound the best Godzilla movie I've ever seen. It takes itself seriously, and it is not silly or ridiculous in any way, shape, or form. It is an amazing, amazing film. It rightfully earned its Academy Award for special effects, based solely on the fact that it operated on a $10 million budget and created the effects that it did. And then we also got news that Godzilla Minus... So that drops on Netflix, and it becomes the first film in the history to have simultaneous success with video on demand and streaming. As according to a report from IndieWire, Godzilla Minus One is now the first film in history to occupy the number one spot on both Netflix and iTunes simultaneously. This comes only days after the film had its release on Netflix and it shot to the number one spot. So that movie in and of itself is big. The other thing that just keeps finding steam, and what I find fascinating, is that the Godzilla universe that Legendary has been working continues to go strong too. As Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, is coming out in March, or came out in March. We have the next film in the series. You know, everybody was surprised that they lost their director / showrunner, whoever you want to call it. And yet they picked up Grant Spitoor, who is another strong up-and-coming director, to move on in this franchise. And whether you think the movies are good or bad, they make money. People are going to see them. Like, Godzilla vs. Kong managed $470 million worldwide. Godzilla X Kong has grossed more than $560 million worldwide. Blah, I couldn't get that out. These movies are getting people to come to the theater. They're making money hand over fist. What is it about this franchise that seems to be speaking to audiences today, other than PC Tony, because he doesn't care for Godzilla? And that's fine. He's been very open about it.
Oh, I haven't.
I just love targeting you, man. Like,
I mean, it's a, like, go ahead, Dave. I'll just
embrace your hate.
I know. I don't mind an attack.
Put up your little X like you do when you don't want to talk about things.
No, I didn't. God, the only X is in the title.
So, okay, guys, in all seriousness, what is it about Godzilla films that seems to be working so well right now with audiences? Because so many other franchises aren't making, and you know, these aren't blowing box office records out of the water like the Legendary, but $567 million is no small chunk of change. Godzilla X Kong, Godzilla Minus One, like, it was made on a nothing budget and it's just obliterated it. So what is it? What makes these films work? And I'll, you know, at least to you. Dave, I'll let you go first. You're a lawyer.
I don't think this has much to do with anything analytical as...
No, lawyer the shit out of it, bro.
I mean, like, nostalgia, I think, has got a lot to do with it. Godzilla is a beloved character. There is a nostalgia element to it. We saw Godzilla Minus One harken back to, I kind of draw the comparison to, like, when the Dark Knight trilogy kind of came out and, like, Batman was looked at as being campy and kind of like, this is silly. And then the Dark Knight trilogy went back to his roots as to what Batman really stood for. And Godzilla Minus One was kind of like, you know, some of the Godzilla movies, Matthew Broderick, that one, even the Monster versus certain extent. It's like, well, this isn't really the Godzilla that I remember, or that I want my Godzilla to be a unstoppable force of destruction. I don't want to have anything redeeming about him. Just have him be the, you know, apocalyptic creature that he should be. And that's what Godzilla Minus One really was like. Okay, this is the Godzilla that I kind of remember. This is gritty. This is like, the tech isn't as much as it should be. This is just a really good basic story being told about this monster ruining everything. The newer stuff, Godzilla Kong and the Legendary, the Monsterverse, I think, you know, the Monarch Legacy of Monsters series being as well received as it was helped a lot and created like a springboard from which they kind of leapt. And I know Pat didn't like the last couple episodes. I still haven't watched the damn thing. I need to, but I don't know. I mean, I think it Godzilla just appeals to something innate in a lot of people. And it's a character that a lot of people are, you know, still enamored with, even after all of these years. King Kong's the same way. You're talking Godzilla and Kong. I mean, King Kong goes back to the 1930s, even before Godzilla was around. So there's a certain level of attachment that I just think is still driving a lot of interest in these characters, and to see them presented in a way that people want them to be presented. I want my monsters to be deadly and damaging. And okay, this comes pretty close. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen the new Godzilla Kong. I'm probably going to watch it, but it's like monster buddy cop team up. I guess. I don't know. DP, what do you think about all this?
I think it's the nostalgia. I think you've got that, you know, right on the head. It's, you know, that nostalgia, people being able to watch it with taking it to this new height with the new visual effects and all that different stuff you can do to just make it look that much more devastating, that much more powerful on a big screen. I think really makes a lot of difference, you know, for some of that stuff. And yeah, those characters are so iconic that when you bring them in and you can add to that whole entity of that huge monster and make it just look that much more devastating is probably what does it. Because otherwise, I don't really know why there's such a hit on these right now. And like that there's so many different companies that are putting them out and they're all successful, which is just crazy.
There's certain characters that are timeless and successful across generations, regardless of like where in time you want to tell the story. And this is one of them. And like Hollywood and movie can come in and out of fashion, right? It's very fashionable right now for kaiju. It's becoming unfashionable to be a superhero movie almost, right? Like we feel like we might be doing that. And anytime you bring in fashion, I think that everything is cyclical. And that's kind of what you see is you're going to have this cycle of nostalgia, new storytelling to being tired of this. And that's kind of what we're getting here. And while these have been well done, at some point people get sick of that too. So I'm happy you guys are happy because you love those movies. And we know other people like that. Rob and Jay, they have the big feud on Twitter between Godzilla and King Kong. I don't know if you follow those guys. It's so fun. So yeah, I get the fandom, and there are some really great movies. Like didn't John C. Reilly just make a King Kong movie or something too? Was he in Skull Island? There you go. So
that,
like they've been
the best movie out of them on Skull Island.
Yeah, they've been kicking butt. They've been kicking butt.
And it doesn't just limit itself to the big screen, too. Like the Apple TV series that I'm forgetting. I watched
You had gotten up and I'd mentioned that it was very well received. I know you didn't like the end of it, but that seemed to be like a catapult for Godzilla Kong, the new movie that came out. It seemed like people had really that really helped that movie because, you know, looking at it at face value, these two monsters who were trying to kill each other in the last movie, now they're going to team up. But I know Legacy of Monsters was used as a springboard because they timed it pretty well. And you saw the financial results of that. You know, Legacy of Monsters ends, Godzilla X Kong comes out, bang, here's some money.
Yeah, it's doing really, really well. And it hasn't, you know, obviously hasn't jumped the shark yet with fans. All right, let's get into some news with some actors around our nerdosphere. Somewhat surprising, this Evangeline Lilly, known to us as in many different roles, from her role in Lost to her character as Hope Van Dyne in the Ant-Man MCU world, announced her retirement from acting to pursue basically humanitarian work. Now, there's never any reason to begrudge anyone for you know, leaving a career and particularly leaving acting to pursue what she is about to pursue in this undertaking. And she does say that she might return to Hollywood one day, but for now, like what she's doing is where she belongs. My initial thoughts outside of congratulation is kind of selfishly, what does this mean for anything for Marvel in particular? I know a lot of people aren't like, oh, no, the Wasp is gone. Or, you know, the actress playing the Wasp is gone. Whatever shall we do? I also know that she was one of the redeeming parts of the Ant-Man series, in my opinion. I liked her. I liked her role as Janet. Or Hope. Sorry, not Janet. That's Michelle Pfeiffer. And so this kind of comes as a surprise. So if Hope continues to be a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, who fills that void? And will they fill? I guess even before you get to that, will they fill that void, or will they just kind of forget about it? She exists in the outer world, and we just talk about her externally and not have her back on a movie. Tony.
Tiffany Strand.
Yep, figure it out. Funny. No.
I could care less that she's retiring from acting, and I also, at the same time, wish her the best that life has to offer for her. Lost had a dumb fucking ending. I'm done now.
Do you think they keep Hope Van Dyne, or do you think they let her go away with character?
I could care as much about that as Evangeline Lilly's acting career.
All right, so Tony is...
I just think, I think it's a very irrelevant character, like, cool or not. This isn't like Kang, okay? I mean, we need Kang explained. If we never see the Wasp again, I don't know if it's going to come up on the show or not.
Honestly, I'm not sure we see Ant-Man again, other than his skeletal corpse in the middle of the desert in the next Deadpool and Wolverine movie. I don't think they bring her back. I don't think, and it's not a slight on Evangeline Lilly or the Wasp character. I just, you know, with the conundrum they faced after Quantumania and the whole Kang situation, I think you'll see a steer away from that. Maybe they get Paul Rudd back involved as Ant-Man. I don't know, but I don't see Wasp as being an integral character to the future of the MCU. So as far as her acting career, hey, man, you know, God bless you. Good luck. You know, we've seen actors do this. You know, Meg Ryan stepping away at the apex of her career. Phoebe Cates is another one you look at and say, well, she never really had an apex other than one particular scene that we all know about. But, you know, if Evangeline Lilly wants to step away and do humanitarian efforts and do something different, cool. I'd be like you guys are saying, I begrudge her nothing.
Have a kid, maybe? Who knows?
The Phoebe Cates scene. The Phoebe Cates scene that we're all referring to, you're, of course, talking about the Christmas monologue in Gremlins, right?
Absolutely. What did you think I was talking about?
Yes. I don't know.
Is it crazy how many...
The Abraham Lincoln monologue in Gremlins 2?
Is it crazy how many classic 80s movies came out, like, this past week, years ago? I mean, Gremlins, there was Ferris Bueller, there was another one, too.
Well, no, Ferris Bueller didn't come out. It was Ferris Bueller. The day off in the movie was
just And then Gremlins came out against Ghostbusters.
Gremlins and Ghostbusters came out at the same time. It was an interesting time because both movies turned a profit, which they thought they would cannibalize each other, and they very much did not.
And can I give a shout out to our friend DJ for having his nerd card revoked?
No.
For having his nerd card revoked.
He is dead to us. Like, how the fuck can you not get through Ferris Bueller's Day Off? Like, how the fuck can you not do that? Like, shameful. And I, you know what? Again, he's a Zack Snyder fan. Like, I should have known. And now he's dead. Dead. Big buzzer to one DJ. There's a reason it's called the Mindless Wrestling Podcast.
Wow.
Because there's no mind.
Now we
on
have
that
a blood
podcast.
Feud. It is a blood
beef.
Feud.
We have beef.
Blood
punches
feud.
Punches have been thrown.
Oh. Blood.
Now we got, where's Taylor? Q, Taylor Swift's
oh
bad blood.
Oh my
because
goodness.
There it is. We've got bad
Let
blood.
Let me know.
Baby.
Let me tell you something.
Are we there yet?
Yep.
Are we there yet?
Yep.
No. Are we there yet?
Yes.
No.
Are we there yet?
Yes.
No. Are we there yet?
No. Yes. We are there. It is on.
It has been a long time.
It is on like Godzilla and King Kong.
Or Donkey Kong.
All right.
Well, we were talking about Donkey Kong. We're talking about King Kong.
It's a Kong or a Dong. True. I mean, that's what it's all.
Yeah.
Now you've turned it into a Dong thing.
See, now we're going to move away.
The whole episode, Dave's been really bad.
He's been terrible. It's all been Dave. It's not been funny at all. And again, then... I just love that throughout this whole thing, I love that DP is back on the show because this show desperately needed like a real, like true straight man, like just the observer to the chaos that just kind of maintains the calm throughout the whole thing. There's nothing we do that breaks the scientist, like at all.
The worst thing is Ray being gone because now you pick on me most of the time.
It's fun. I mean,
Dick.
Damn.
Yeah. You want to replace? You want to replace the Wasp? You can have Cara Delevingne do it.
All right.
I think she could fit the role. Yeah. Just to close out the chaos.
There you go. Well done. This know, is, this is the balance.
Way to smooth things over. That's awesome.
I know somewhere. I know somewhere she could fit.
You fill a role, all right.
Let's move into the last story. This is a casting rumor that broke this week. Everybody's running with this. The funny thing about this story is, as I tried to trace it to its source, like every website I would go to would cite another website that would then cite another website. It was very much like I was going down a serious rabbit hole. But there is a film, a biopic of the Beatles that is in production that reportedly has cast its Fab Four. It's a film that's going to be directed by Sam Mendes, best known for Skyfall, Spectre in 1917, that he was going to helm four films about the Beatles, with each one centered on a different member of the band. Mendes, according to Screen Rant, who got it from In Snyder, says the Beatles movies have cast Harris Dickinson as John Lennon, Paul Mescal as Paul McCartney, Barry Keoghan as Ringo Starr, and Charlie Rowe as George Harrison. The rumor, as of this podcast recording, still has been unconfirmed by Sony, which is the studio behind these four films.
Wait,
gentlemen,
did you say Sony?
Stop! Right. Just no, don't do it.
They're okay outside.
They're not making Spider-Man. It's not a Spider-Man movie.
If Sony fucks up the Beatles, Sony fucks up the Beatles too.
No.
I'll give up.
This casting's awesome.
So yeah, can I just say it's interesting? Like Barry Keoghan looks like Ringo Starr, but I'm also like, he got cast as the least interesting Beatle.
Did he though?
Yeah. 1,000%.
I don't know. Barry Keoghan is really good. I mean, even though I still just think about him fucking the grave in Salt Lick. But
he's not he's a phenomenal actor.
Oh, he's great.
That's not
Salt Lick.
Yeah, Saltburn, sorry.
I just let it go.
He licked a lot of things.
He's thinking about that Venom horse.
at this point, I've lost all control of the show and am just trying to get to the end.
Oh, yeah, you give DP a compliment, he takes things right off the rails. Did you see what happened there?
No, it was really your fault. It's fine. You can't remember the name of Saltburn. So here's what I think is really interesting. Like, I do really think, like, I don't know much about these younger actors as... get it together, man. You've got issues. All right. I do like the Beatles as a story, and as someone who has like read just about anything you could possibly find about the career path of the band, of many of the performers in the band, who's watched. I still haven't watched all of the Get Back documentary. There's just so much time to dedicate. Like, that's a lot of hours, but. Ringo, like, to get back to my point about Ringo, the reason why I find Ringo to be the least compelling Beatle, and I'm sure he'll have, you know, it'll be a very interesting life that we learn about, is, like, he is the DP of the Beatles. Like, he is the guy who just is kind of the even keel throughout the whole thing. Like, nobody dislikes Ringo out of the band. Like, in the internal feuds...
You said you're boring, chum!
It's not that he's boring. It's that everybody liked him. And he was never, like, he was just never the guy. Like, he wasn't John Lennon and Paul McCartney butting heads the way PC Tunney and Patrick O'Dowd are. He wasn't the disgruntled talent like David Ungar clearly is. Like, if you look at him, he's just pissed that he doesn't get to give his stories over and over and over again, much the way George never got to record his songs on Beatles albums. It was all about... Paul and,
are you John? Are you John? Am I Paul?
Oh, I'm totally John. I'm the asshole, and you've gone corporate because you are the executive producer of the band. I have just given us all our Beatles role. Here you go.
I've got an idea for a new band called Wings. You hear?
Oh gosh, take Linda and get the fuck out of here. Linda McCartney.
That bitch will take half my money too.
She sure will.
Fucking one-footed cunt.
Damn.
What? That's Paul. Fucking douche.
Nowadays, it's true. You also have to hate Michael Jackson. Don't forget that. Michael Jackson did steal all the songs. I mean, he didn't steal them, but he bought them, but behind his back. It's awesome. Great story. But that's the thing, is if Barry took this role, that's great. This is an easy layup for him as kind of getting behind Ringo Starr. Like, I want to see how the other actors sink their teeth into Lennon, McCartney, and George. I just finished reading a biography about George Harrison that is phenomenal and terrific and really does a deep dive into what a lot of people would call the Forgotten Beatle, or he was called the Forgotten Beatle in a lot of ways, because he was extraordinarily talented. But really the force that was Lennon and McCartney as collaborators and songwriters, like that really dominated the band. And when those two started to fracture, George ends up, and maybe this is what'll happen to the bandwagon, George ended up siding with Lennon in the whole deal. And McCartney was sort of left on his own. And that kind of broke up the band more so than wife did. Like, it was all squabbling within the group, and they were all wanting to go in very different directions with the band. So, but these casting, if true, this is great casting. So I'd watch these movies. Like, I would absolutely watch all these movies, even the Ringo film, because that's terrific casting. That's my thought on this report.
George Ringo.
Yeah, I mean, the casting looks really solid, and it's cool that they're going to split this into four different movies. It's like, I just hope they're better than like when Kiss did all their single albums all those years ago. I hope that the movies are better than the solo Kiss albums were. But yeah, the cast looks solid. It's at least there's not as much casting rumors about this Fab Four as there was about a different Fantastic Four. So yeah. I want to see more stuff about the Beatles. I think there's a lot of people really interested in the behind the scenes and what really broke these guys apart. So yeah, this is true, and I know we're get your salt shaker out. We'll see. But yeah, this sounds like a solid beginning to whatever they're trying to do here.
I see what you did with the number four there. My question to you guys is, so they're going to do four separate movies, right? Individually about each Beatle. Okay. So none of them will be in any of the other movies except for their own, right? Maybe. How is this project working? Like, is it told from one perspective with the other person in it, and then another perspective in the person in it, another perspective of the person in it? Because I'd love to see a story told right up until they become the Beatles and meet each other from each four, and then I'd like to see a fifth movie where they're together as the Beatles and tell that story.
Yeah, I actually kind of wondered
about that. I just don't know what that is.
And I don't know either. So because depending on how far they take this, are they taking this to life after the Beatles? Is it through the Beatles and their breakup? Is it just taking it through each one of their perspectives of their lives in the band? Like, there's a lot of questions out there that'll be fascinating. And honest, you know, I kind of ragged on Ringo to start this in terms of, you know, least exciting or whatever. But being the person who was kind of let me get to it. When you think about it, though, like, as the guy that really wasn't deeply involved in the infighting, like, that is a perspective that is very that would be very interesting to see and follow. Like, how did Ringo manage this? Because he was cool with everybody. Like, and the Beatles, like, the other three Beatles adored him. Like, when Ringo put together his solo album, his first solo album, all three of the other Beatles helped him because they loved him so much they wanted him to be successful.
I know Dan is dying to get in here, but I think Ringo under all everything, it might be the most important one, because he could step back and not only like with the friendships he had and his position in the band and still able to get his points across, but his drumming style was necessary for the band he was in and the role he had to play. They didn't need a drummer to go out there and be, you know, name your top, you know, whoever you want, right? But go ahead, DP.
Tommy Lee.
Oh,
he
buddy,
need to be
buddy,
the focal point.
He definitely didn't need to be, well, Tommy Lee.
Buddy Rich or Moon or, you know, whoever.
That's where I was going to go. Like, I like the idea go through, you know, maybe when they first, how they got to be a band together, you know, and go through the whole thing of how their rise to stardom and their breakup and everything. And do each one of the movies from each one of their perspectives of how it went through everything, how they got to where they got. Because, like you said, you know, that each one of those different views could be really interesting to hear on how it went and how each person felt about everything of how it went. And to see, like, what one of the, like, Ringo, like what he thought was going on from somebody else with everybody else, when, you know, John Lennon was going to had a different thought, different point of view on things because he was going through some different shit. So like, it'd be really cool to see that. Do each one of them, it goes through the same story, the same thing, but it's from different, each one of their different points of views throughout their career as a Beatle.
The incredible rise and inevitable fall of the Beatles as told through four.
I mean, that would work. That would really work.
Be cool.
It would. I there's a lot of, there is also a lot of potential for people to be up in their feelings if their beloved Beatles are not lavishly, you know, celebrated. Right.
How dare you marginalize John,
they don't tell a Jedi assassination story, right? People might get upset.
Right. Something like that.
Tell a Lennon assassination story.
Whoa, Dan. Okay, Ringo. Dan.
All right.
Let me tell you what I saw.
No matter what, I think this is shaping up to be a potentially great film. Guys, we are heading into our final home stretch of the episode. And to do that, we have to, of course, move into what you're watching. So today, we'll start with The Scientist, EPP. Ringo, what you watching?
Well, we cranked through Bodkin on Netflix. If anybody's seen that, Will Forte. Kind of similar, somewhat of a Only Murders in the Building, but a little deeper, darker type of story. He's a podcaster going to a town in Ireland and trying to tell a story from, you know, a thing that happened way back in the past, and a whole bunch of weird shit starts happening that's, you know, makes the story bigger than what it really thought it was. So it's a really cool show. You know, a little bit of comedy, but a little darker for Will Forte. That was really awesome. And then we started watching season two of The After Party on Apple. So if you haven't seen season one was fantastic. So far, season two seems to be a little overdone, but we'll see how it goes.
That's that's with Tiffany.
Tiffany Haddish.
Yeah, right?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, pretty solid.
Dave.
Finished Gen V, which I'm imploring everybody on this show, please watch it. If you have not done so before Thursday, please. Patrick, looking at you. Pat's like, whatever.
Patrick, I haven't watched it either, and I'm not going to.
You really need to, Tony.
No, I think Patrick and I will recommend it. Good and evil here.
DP and I are recommending it.
Lennon and McCartney are going to know that they don't need to watch Gen V. They're good enough to just continue with the boys only.
Whatever. See, and this is exactly what happens to George. George's ideas just don't
It's just perfect. Life imitating art, exactly.
I mean, I don't want to get into race or anything, but is Ray Billy Preston? Billy Preston's
really
amazing.
Just stick together. We really just need to stick together.
George and Ringo are going to stick together on this one. So you guys will be like, what's going on in this first episode? Well, if you'd listen to me, you would know. But anyway, I keep watching Files of the Unexplained, which was very good. That's it. And I actually went back and started watching like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a little bit here and there for reasons, just to kind of, because I enjoyed the earlier seasons of that, and before things got like, we're like, we didn't know what was going to happen, so we just made this shit up as we went along, aspect of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So that's kind of what I've been doing this week.
Mr. Sonny.
Staying on the cooking trend, Something's Burning with Burt Kreischer's got some really good episodes out. Fluffy and Sean Evans from Hot Ones is one that's out on YouTube right now, along with him and Cheech and Chong, which are some really fun episodes, some cooking and some jokes going on there. I've also been watching, since we've talking some wrestling here on the show today, Who Killed WCW on Vice. It's on Tuesday nights. The first episode is out commercial free on YouTube, on Vice's YouTube channel. So if you want to get caught up, you can do it by just skipping a few of YouTube's commercials after 5 to 20 seconds and not see any commercials there. But 271 on DirecTV, 10 o'clock Eastern on Tuesday nights, part two. Is going to be pretty good, I think.
Yeah, based on the, among other things, the Guy Evans book, The Incredible Rise and the Inevitable Fall of WCW. Actually, oddly enough, is the name of that book. But I, too, have watched that first episode. Very, very good. I actually really haven't watched a whole heck of a lot. I watched a fun documentary called Whodunit that was about the making of the movie Clue. And got, for those of you who don't know, Clue is one of my all-time favorite comedies. Like, you will never hear me say an ill word about Clue, right, Dave?
That is very true,
John. I think it's one of the most...
I'm going to call you John from now on.
Fair enough. But one of the, in my opinion, just one of the most brilliant comedies ever made. All-time greats, improvisation. And to just listen to the actors, because he interviews a lot of the actors, you know, those that are still with us, to talk about their experience. It's just fun. I love those sort of documentaries where you just kind of get to see not so much how the movie was made, but like how these actors feel about the experience and the people they got to work with. And so really, really, really good stuff. And I've been on a old, like classic old 1960s Disney movie kick. I got this from my mom and movies that we used to watch with her as a kid. And I watched today, this morning, I watched 1967's The Happiest Millionaire, starring Leslie Ann Warren and Fred McMurray. It is a story where nothing consequential or really bad happens, but it's damn near 3 hours long. And it's a fun little musical where Fred McMurray plays a millionaire in Philadelphia who basically doesn't want his daughter to get married and grow up. And he also owns a room full of alligators. It's awesome. It makes no goddamn sense, but I enjoy it thoroughly.
Can I add one more thing in? I'm sorry, post here.
Can I add one more thing? No. Go ahead.
Netflix. Netflix, How to Rob a Bank. Talks about Scott Scurlock and his robbing bank spree in Seattle. Like, the dude would make meth and sell it and rob banks and lived in this giant fucking treehouse. And it is a really fun 90 minutes if you enjoy that kind of true crime thing. So check that out as well.
I'm also watching the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. That, of course, Game 1 happened this past Saturday. And my favorite sports tournament outside of the NCAA basketball tournament is happening right now. Love the Stanley Cup.
I'm going to show my ass a little bit here, but I'm guessing both of you guys think Florida should easily handle this series.
Series?
No. Yeah, I think they've been the best team in the playoffs since they've gotten healthy towards the end of the season.
I think it'll go 6. I do think Florida. Dave and I, if you listen to the podcast.
I don't. That's what I meant. I'm gonna show my ass here.
Thanks, Paul. Yeah. Thanks, Paul.
I cannot listen to fucking 15 to 18 hours of content a week, okay?
So Dave and I have very different opinions about how that game one went, because I think Florida really, here's the thing. I want Edmonton to win this thing. If for no other reason that I really like to see Canada get a cup for the first time in like 30 some years. Florida, after basically taking everything from Edmonton 2 periods, exerted its will to the point where Edmonton got desperate and put Dreisaitl and McDavid on the same line to try and generate offense, and they were shut out. So I think Florida, I don't know that they'll dominate it. Edmonton's too good to not score. And Florida flirted with disaster on the penalty kill. Like, they had 5 penalties. They can't do that. Edmonton will score. But I really felt like Florida in that 3rd period asserted itself in such a way that if I'm an Edmonton fan, I'd be very, very worried, because it looked like Florida took over. Now, we'll see. Game 2 is, you know, happening this evening in the land of when this podcast drops. So could be singing a different tune after Monday night. Dave was very encouraged by Edmonton's performance despite going scoreless in the first 2 periods and felt like there was more to get from it.
If they do what they did in game one and get a couple shots to go in, they're fine.
Well, folks, you know what? If you want even more in-depth coverage from Pat and Dave, tune in tomorrow morning to Hockey Talk.
Because we know Tunney won't.
It's true.
That's okay.
God damn it. You know, you see what I did here, and then I get fucked in the end again.
This is, well, but, you know, no secret. George hated Paul. He did.
Just keep it together. Are you going to change your handle to Paul Tunney instead of PC Tunney?
I love everybody. I love everyone. Paul Commissioner Tunney.
But last little bit, quick trivia question for the three of you. Where did John Lennon sign the paperwork that officially broke up the Beatles?
Like where? Like he was in an IHOP or something? Or?
At an IHOP in Stamford, Connecticut. There you go.
He was in the United States.
Boise, Idaho.
Nope.
Damn.
Disney's Polynesian Resort at Walt Disney World.
Really?
Yep.
The happiest place on earth. My ass. Fuck you guys.
Broke up the fucking Beatles, bitches. Wow. And again, as I'm wearing my Mickey Mouse t-shirt, it all comes back to this group. I am John Lennon. Okay.
It's all
you all thought it was Yoko.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagoners. Before we get out of here, gentlemen, let's do a quick once around. Remind everybody where they can listen to us on the Chair Shot Radio Network. And this week, we will start to my right with Mr. P.C. Tunney.
Oh, you can find me demeaning George Harrison at P.C. Tunney.
Ringo, I mean, DP.
You can find me all over the world.
We broke social it! Media we broke it!
And it's me, DP.
Isn't that great? Isn't that great when you're running a show and DP's on it and you break him? That's like my whole goal on DWI. Now you see how good that feels.
That was it. That's me, DPP. Find me. I will not be supporting the Ringo.
George / Dave.
Yeah, you can find me on X at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG. Facebook.com/Attitude of Aggression. And on Threads and Instagram at Attitude of Aggression, all one word. And then there is the burner account. At Led Zeppelin was better, just to piss people off.
Okay. And you can follow me on the X Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That is at WRESTLNGREALIST. You can generally catch me every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday on the Chair Shot Radio Network. We'll see what happens this Wednesday, whether Greg or Patrick cancels is always a real possibility when it comes to the Greg DeMarco show. Dave, I got to tell you, I know you're in charge of naming this damn thing. If they don't have something to do with the fucking Beatles in the name of this podcast, you're probably fired.
I think Salt Lick sounded good, bud. That's pretty funny. Zeppelin and Beatles, though, I think that's comparing apples and oranges a little bit.
I know.
It's a tough call. We do know that the Beatles didn't steal half their music, though. Zeppelin admits it. Zeppelin is like, yeah, we did.
No, not offended at all. Not that big of a fan.
Right, just, not even a little bit.
Just go for it.
They were very, very open about how they acquired their tune. All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Make sure that you like, subscribe, follow, all that fun stuff. Also, follow the show at Bandwagon Nerds on the X Twitter as well. Now, get yourself out of the basement, get some sun, and listen to some Beatles tunes, because we certainly are, as we are the Fab Four of the Chair Shot Radio Network. You have been listening to Bandwagon Nerds on the Chair Shot Radio Network and part of the chairshot.com.
I just want you to know how sorry we are that things got so fucked up with us and Mr. Wallace. When we got into this thing with the best intentions, really. I never...
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration? I didn't mean to do that. Please, continue. You were saying something about best intentions?
You need reliable appliances to help you conquer the day. And Menards is the one-stop shop for huge savings on new energy-efficient appliances. We carry the largest in-stock selection, starting at low prices and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade today and save big money on new appliances right now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.